I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. These familiar words from 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11, seem to speak to the physical reality that we all face. We're all born. We grow up. We become adults. Yet as we look into these words a little deeper, we see that what he's really speaking of here, what Paul is speaking of, is spiritual maturity, a growing from a beginning point where we receive God's Spirit towards the ultimate goal of life eternal in God's kingdom. Recently, two young men who I'm acquainted with, not in this area, made some unfortunate choices, discussed something of no value, and then one of them posted it in the public forum. And, well, they were really surprised when their parents found out about it, and they were taught that they needed to be thoughtful about what they said and what they put their names to. They needed to consider. They were very embarrassed and hopefully have learned a very, very valuable lesson. As we face this current time within the Church of God, some have called it a current crisis, various challenges that some feel the church is facing in various ways and areas. Some have taken it upon themselves to speak openly and blatantly about their opinions and thoughts and feelings. Let's turn over to Ephesians 5 and consider what we find there. Ephesians 5 tells us, "Let no man deceive you with vain words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the children of disobedience. Therefore, don't be partakers of them or with them. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable to the Lord." Continuing in verse 11, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore, he says, 'Awake, sleeping ones, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light.' See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." Today, I'd like to talk to you about five questions, if you will, that you can ask yourself, or that we can all ask ourselves as we have opportunity to discuss or hold forth on things that are occurring around us or amongst us. The first point I'd like to bring to your attention is to consider, the question to ask is, who am I helping? Very often when things occur in our lives, when opportunities or when challenges arise, when a person does something or a group of people do something that upsets us, well, that's just it. It upsets us. It affects us on an emotional level, and we might find ourselves lashing out, getting angry, getting frustrated, and saying things very quickly, not considering what comes out of our mouths or out of our fingertips. If we look at Psalm 37, let's turn to Psalm 37 and consider these words. David wrote this. He said, "Fret not yourself because of evildoers, and don't be envious against the workers of iniquity, for they'll soon wither like the grass and fade as the green herb. Trust in God and do good, and you'll dwell in the land, and you'll be fed on truth. Delight yourself also in God, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. Roll your way on God. Put your ways on God. Trust in him, and he will work. He'll bring forth your righteousness like the light and your judgment like noonday. Rest in God. Wait patiently for him. Don't fret yourself because of him who prospers in this way, because of him who practices wickedness. Cease from anger, forsake wrath. Don't fret yourself to do evil. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on God, they shall inherit the earth. The Bible is replete with stories of God wanting to step in and defend his people, of protecting them. He'll fight the battles if we allow him to. We might cast our thoughts back to the Israel at the Red Sea. Here they've come out of the land of Egypt. They're being chased by the armies, the epitome of evil of Pharaoh on earth at that time. They find themselves trapped on a land, in a land area, and they can't get away. There's water all around them, and the army's hard on their heels. And what does God say through Moses to the people? In Exodus 14, we see that. And Moses said to the people, "Do not fear. Stand still and see the salvation of God, which he will prepare for you this day. For the Egyptians, whom you have seen today, you will never see ever again. God will fight for you, and you will be silent." Very important words for us to consider. Are we helping others? Are we really helping others? Are we really trying to serve their needs and consider the needs of the people when we speak from an emotional point? Or are we merely trying to vent our own feelings? Are we simply trying to be heard? The second point I'd like you to consider when facing opportunities, was I asked for my opinion? I think we probably all have run into somebody who likes to blurt dogmatic opinions out loud. They just will, from some place deep within themselves, fire off a concept or an idea, and not really realizing that, you know, they're swinging a club, and you never know who you're going to hit when you swing that verbal club. Some say, we've all heard the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I don't know about you, but when somebody says something mean or hurtful to me, it hurts. I feel it. It doesn't break the bones, sure, but it does leave a mark, doesn't it, on some level. So we need to be careful and consider what we're saying. Sometimes people will even take it upon themselves to have an opinion about how you choose to spend your lunch money or whatever you're given to do. Really inconsequential everyday things that we all get involved in, but yet somebody always has an opinion, don't they? James chapter 1 has some very important words for us to consider as well when we decide, was I asked for my opinion? James 1, in verse 19. Therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Simple instructions. Listen, then listen, and listen some more, and think about what you're going to say, and listen to that inside of your head, where it's safe, or you can't be marked by it. And consider it, and don't be angry. It's a good idea to remind ourselves that an opinion is just an opinion. It isn't necessarily a fact. Did you go to the Encyclopedia Britannica, volume, I'll put my name on it, Steve Kennedy's opinions about thus and such, and look up Steve Kennedy's opinion about thus and such, and here it is in writing, Steve Kennedy is absolutely right when he speaks about thus and such, because it's in the Encyclopedia Britannica, volume Steve Kennedy. Put your own name there. Is your opinion a fact? Is it really a fact, or is it merely your perspective from your point of view about something? Does your opinion really necessarily have to be heard? Is it so important that everybody in the world knows what you think about something, or what I think about something? What is my opinion? am I so smart, or are we so wonderfully intelligent and blessed with grandiose knowledge that we can stand up and speak on any subject whatsoever? Well, I know from my point of view, I can't. If we are going to share our opinion, let's try to share it in a way that's not dogmatic. Well, you know, I was considering this subject, and here's kind of what I was thinking about it. You know, of course, you can do with it what you will. Instead of, you should do this. This is the way to do it. Anybody who doesn't do it this way, well, they just don't know what they're talking about. You know, let's find some humbleness. Let's reach down and consider, be gentle, be courteous. Try to nurture this relationship with this individual or group of people, if you will. You might offer your perspective to help balance the point of view of the individual. But don't be too surprised if you can't convince them to change their mind. The third question we should all ask ourselves as we consider whether to speak or to respond to some matter: is it my place to share this? Does this really concern me? Did I experience this from this person or this group? Or did somebody else? And am I sharing third hand or fourth hand or nth hand information? Is it even accurate? We might all know of people who will tell us, or maybe we've overheard them tell somebody else, well, so-and-so doesn't like you. That guy over there thinks you shouldn't wear that particular piece of clothing. Or, well, who are they to presume to speak for somebody else? Who are we to presume to speak for anybody but ourselves? We can't know the intents and thoughts and considerations of the individuals that we're speaking of, can we? We barely know our own sometimes, don't we? The mind is an interesting thing. It's challenged. It's deceitful. It draws us into places. And if we can't really comprehend our own thoughts sometimes, how are we to presume to understand somebody else's point of view or intent? Romans 14. I think Romans 14 really speaks to this. Romans 14, verse 13. Let us therefore not judge one another anymore, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. Well, let me bring somebody else's thoughts or opinions about something to our friend or our brother. Are we really helping them, or are we reveling in something that hurts another person? Are we really trying to help them? Are we really coming from a place of knowledge? And really, in the principle that we find in Matthew 5, where it says we should go to our brother if there's an offense. When we have a problem with somebody, we need to work directly with them ourselves. Expand that idea a little bit. That other person who has an opinion or a thought or a feeling needs to be working directly with that individual themselves. Not working through intermediaries or trying to pass on information through layers and layers of people in order to get the message across. How do you address that? How can I help it that somebody in another area doesn't like my tie, perhaps, and tells their friend, who tells another friend, who tells my wife, who says you shouldn't wear that tie anymore because so-and-so doesn't like your tie? Well, she would never do that because she probably picked it out for me. But you see the point? When somebody comes or has comments about somebody else, we need to shut that down. We need to turn away from that and not be willing to hear. Not be willing to hear what is essentially gossip, but let that person know that perhaps they should take that concern directly to the person. Maybe even offer to help them to approach that person, but to withdraw so they can have that conversation privately so they can deal with it as it ought to be dealt with. Fourth point to consider as we decide whether to react or respond in any way to something is, am I speaking the truth in love? Not just am I speaking the truth. There's a distinction there. There's plenty of truth, but it can sure be hurtful if it's packaged the wrong way. Am I speaking the truth in love? Jesus gave us a direct commandment in John 13. John 13, we'll start in verse 34. A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. So love seems to be pretty important here. He repeats it several times down the road. We look at chapter 15 of John, verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Again in verse 17, these things I command you, that you love one another. It seemed pretty important. He made a big point of pointing that out. He repeated it at least three times, and probably more than are recorded, to his disciples. If we love one another, if we show that love to one another, people are going to know that we're his disciples, that we belong to him. That's it. Not if we tell tales about one another or say hurtful things. So we need to consider what we say. Consider our brother in love, or our group of brothers in love, and approach them from that standpoint. Love is the fulfilling of the law. God's law is based on love. In fact, if we turn to 1 John 4:8, we'll see something. We all know this, but let's look at it anyway. 1 John 4, verse 8. As I was considering this and found an article in the Good News that brought these points up, and I was just amazed by, I thought, how very appropriate they were. And I realized at the time that, you know, in effect, when we talk about these things, we're talking to the choir, if you will. You know, we all believe these things, and the people that can hear a message, that can hear that we need to love one another, that we need to consider one another from that point of view, probably don't need to hear it. And the ones that do need to hear it probably can't, may not be able to. And I hope for their sake that they can, that God can help them to find their way back to that state of love that considers the other person ahead of their own opinions and thoughts. What does it say in 1 John 4, verse 8? Just the last part of the verse. God is love. God is love. It's a powerful phrase, three words, but do we really comprehend what they say? God is the ultimate, the pinnacle, the epitome, the pinnacle, everything that can be, that is love, God embodies completely. And that's what we want to be like. We want to share in that love. We want to express that love. We want to become that love. Everything that God does is motivated by love, by his outgoing concern for others. It's his essence. It's who he is. It's what he defines and what defines him, in effect. God is love. Actually, is it? It's absolutely the reason behind everything he and Jesus Christ do, is love. If we want to have the mind of the Father, of Jesus Christ, we must think the same way that they do. Love motivates God. It must motivate us. We must strive when we need to talk to our friend about something. We must strive to share our thoughts as inoffensively as possible, to package them in a way that allows them to not be hurt, but to consider what we're saying. If we go in as a human wrecking ball, slamming about, crushing and destroying, what have we accomplished but destruction? We essentially assault the person. We don't help them. We hurt them. We drive them away from the truth without love. Love will consider that person completely. When we have a critical thought or a criticism for our friend, when we combine it with genuine concern, with a complete concern for where they are and where they're at, and helping them to move forward from this point that they're stuck at, we can help. We can be effective. We can help them. They can find a way through the issue and the situation. So we have to come from a place of love when we speak the truth to our brothers. The fifth idea I'd like to share with you, fifth concept, as we consider whether to respond, is my opinion really necessary? I think if we consider all these points together, it probably all is one big point, isn't it? But in digging into it, maybe we'll slow our thoughts down so that when we consider whether to respond, we'll realize, we'll approach the situation more carefully and with thought. Is my opinion really necessary? Micah 6, I believe, speaks to this. What needs to drive our thinking as we consider our brother in love? Here we go. Micah 6, verse 8. He has showed you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And I don't read anywhere in there where it says, point out your brother's flaws or your perceptions of your brother's flaws or your perceptions of somebody else's perceptions of your brother's flaws or how you feel somebody ought to be doing something differently than they are doing it. It says, be merciful, love mercy, walk humbly with God. Do justly. We really need to think about the likely effects of our words before we open our mouth or before we pop the pen open or before we sit down at the keyboard and start typing. Our goal has to be to use words to improve the situations and relationships that we're involved in. When words are going to harm, don't say anything. I think back to a comment that some of your mothers may have shared with you. I know mine did. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Effective words to live by. Proverbs 25. Let's turn to Proverbs 25. Proverbs 25, let's start in verse 8. Do not go forth quickly to fight or to strive, lest you know not what to do in the end of it when your neighbor has put you to shame. You know, don't jump into the fray too quickly because the guy might be stronger than you. It might be best to stand back. Debate your cause. Rather, what it's saying here is debate your cause with your neighbor and do not uncover a secret to another. Do not uncover a secret to another. This is, again, the principle of going to your brother, in this case your neighbor, when you have an issue. Go privately to that individual and talk with them. Rather than bringing it out in the open, rather than turning it into a word fest, a slug fest of emotions and attitudes that harms everybody and helps nobody, and which may ultimately end up in your shame, and probably will, how much better to go to him in private and talk it out? And it says that here in verse 10, lest he who hears it, in other words, he who observes this argument in the open, puts you to shame. and your evil report to return not away. Or in other words, your reputation sticks with you as someone who acts hastily and speaks out of turn. And finally, the verse 11 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. Thinking carefully about what we're saying and how we package it to our brother is an important part of being one of God's children. We need to strive to be humble, to be merciful and loving at all times in all the situations that we come in contact with. Let's turn over to Galatians chapter 6 and as we begin to wrap this. Galatians chapter 6, we'll start in verse 7. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. If you sow a fight, you'll reap a fight. If you sow anger, you reap anger. If you sow evil reports, you reap evil reports. For sowing to his flesh, he will reap corruption from the flesh, but sowing to the Spirit will reap life everlasting from the Spirit. We should not lose heart in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we do not faint. So then as we have time, let us work good toward all, especially towards those of the household of faith. I think the saddest thing to me about this current crisis, to use another's words, is how so many people are turning within into the church itself and fighting within the church. Brothers are at brothers' throats. There are words flying around that are hurtful and thoughtless and unkind. And sadly, it mostly seems to be coming from a particular mindset. A mindset that doesn't belong within God's children, doesn't belong within the household of faith. It's tough enough when things happen from without, but when they come from within, that is even harder. But those who will hear the message will hear what God is saying about loving our brothers, we'll realize that we need to stay strong. That as it says here in Galatians, let us work good toward all, especially towards those of the household of faith. And I think Romans 12 really sums this up just better than anybody could. Better than my own words, better than anybody's words. Let's turn to Romans 12. And let this be the conclusion. Romans 12, we'll start in verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy, shrinking from evil, cleaving to good. In brotherly love to one another, loving fervently, having led one another in honor. As to diligence, not slothful, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in affliction, steadfastly continuing in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, pursuing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with rejoicing ones and weep with weeping ones. Minding the same thing toward one another, not minding high things, but yielding to the lowly. Do not be wise within yourselves. Repay no one evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as far as in you, being in peace with all men. Not avenging yourselves, beloved, but giving place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink, for in so doing you shall heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.